Blog Talk Radio.
What's going on, fellow actors, honored guests, and friends?
Thank you for holding.
It is I, William Powell, the host of the coast, the sage of the stage, the king of DC Media. Welcome to the hippest acting-related show in the land, Inside Acting. So glad you've tuned in. Tonight's episode is brought to you by the column, DC Actors Examiner. Most easily found by Googling DC Actors Examiner. I think I got some problems going on here with some music, so let me see if I can turn the music on down here. Okay, we got some feedback going on in the background here. Hold on one second. Okay, I'm going to have to see what I can do to back out of the music here. Hold on one second. What's going on, fellow actors, honored guests, and friends? It is I, William Powell, the host of the coast, the sage of the stage, the king of DC Media. Welcome to the hippest acting-related show in the land, Inside Acting. So glad you've tuned in to the show. Tonight's episode is brought to you by the column DC Actors Examiner, most easily found by Googling DC Actors Examiner. Tonight I have some outstanding guests coming onto the show. I have joining me first the one and only Brian Dragonuk, the godfather of acting job boards in D.C. and the proud owner and operator of the website Dragonuk Connects, which has been in operation since late 2010. He's been acting a long time. He's got over 150 principal roles. He's got lots of wisdom to share. Let me bring him on in. Hey, Brian, how you doing?
I'm doing fine. How are you tonight?
Fantastic. Fantastic, man.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, man. So I'm so glad you joined the show tonight.
I'm glad to be here.
That's good. That's good. Fantastic. So I'm going to jump right into hypothetical. And let's take a look at the situation of a young actor. You put yourself in the shoes of a young actor and the DMV. And you've had about 2 years of training, and you intend to make a living acting. Can you make a living acting here in the DMV area?
Yeah, there's a lot of people that make a decent living. You're not going to make $250,000 a year. You're not going to be doing the $15 million a picture jobs here, although there are people that were born and raised here that are doing that, but they're doing it because they're out in L.A. now. But there's quite a few people in our area that are in the TV commercial, public service announcement, industrial type business. Every federal agency has its office in Washington, D.C. Most of them cast all of their training videos here, all of their TV commercials here. So we're quite large in that market. There's some nice movies that come here. Most of the large part casting is done either in New York or L.A., but there are places where you can get yourself set up to learn about those and to audition for those. And there's a lot of day player roles that are cast locally by our local casting directors. So depending on what you want to do and how you want to do it, the one thing that I will tell you, there's a lot of people that sort of get tunnel vision. They only want to do major movies, and they only want to do speaking parts in major movies.
Mm.
You're not going to make a living doing that here.
Mm-hmm.
All right. But if you take a TV commercial when it comes up, take a print ad when it comes up, take a training video when it comes up, do a print ad when it comes up, do extra work when it comes up, do the principal roles when they come up. There's also a lot of non-traditional jobs here. There are now, I believe, 9 teaching hospitals that hire actors to be standardized patients. Standardized patient is a training tool for the teaching universities. We play, and I do quite a bit of this, we play a patient with an ailment. We are scripted, but it's heavy on improv as well. And what they do is they evaluate how well the medical students do in interviewing us and doing very, very cursory exams. I'm talking about they might take our blood pressure, they might listen to our stomach, they might listen to our heart and lungs, that type of stuff, not anything that's invasive. There are acting positions for the invasive stuff. They take a lot of training. You have to learn the medical terms, and you have to actually teach the medical students how to do certain exams using your body to do them. It is very, very high-paying stuff that you have to really be of the mindset to do. That is voluntary as far as, in other words, I do a lot of regular SP work, but I don't do any of that. That's not what I'm interested in.
All right. Yeah, that sounds like a lot of work.
So it's, well, yeah, but it's $50 an hour, you know, to do that type of stuff. And so even if you only work 3 hours a day, you've made $100.50. I mean,
that ain't bad.
So it's a lot of work, but you know, you've got to be willing to teach both sexes, the male students and the female students, how to do an exam on your body. Like I say, I'm not interested in that. I do, you know, just the regular SP work, which is mostly interviews and, you know, the heart, the lungs, might listen to the stomach, might watch you walk, might test your strength of your arms, strength of your legs, stuff like that. And there's enough of it out there, you could work a full-time job just going from hospital to hospital doing that.
That's very interesting, very interesting. So let's move on to another question about, now, how can we as DMV actors, or should we as DMV actors, try to change the stigma that Hollywood seems to have against this area? For instance, the insistence to cast L.A. and New York actors as the leads and then to take locals and cast them as extras.
Well, that has been the way since there's been movies, and it changes from time to time. There's been a couple of movies that have come in that have cast one or two people in L.A. or New York and have cast the rest locally. But for the most part, when you're investing $100 million to do a 90-minute movie, you try to get as many named people, recognizable people, money in the bank people involved in the movie as you can, and then you fill in with everything else. But like I said, there are places, Breakdown Services, Actor Access, where you can find out about the auditions and audition for them, but you've got to go to L.A. or New York, or there is some headway on video auditions where you can do a good audition with the actual script that they're using to audition the principal roles, and you can submit by video your performance. That is, as technology improves, that is becoming a favored way for some people to cast. But you know, we've had from time to time, we've had people in the starring roles. Linda Hamilton from a few years back was born and raised outside of D.C. There's been people as long as there's been Hollywood. If you go all the way back into the movies of the 30s and 40s, Tallulah Bankhead was born and raised on the Eastern Shore. She's buried outside of what's it, Crisfield.
I didn't know that.
On the main road, there's a little church. As you're headed towards Ocean City, it's on the left-hand side. It's a little church outside of, I guess it's Graysonville.
Okay.
All right. And it's got a brick wall around it. Well, she's buried in there.
Huh.
Because she came home, you know, to be buried. So we've had people that are star caliber here. We've even had some directors. There was a guy that born and raised in Georgetown. His first two movies that he made, the first one was called Being John Malkovich, and the second was called Adaptation. All right, he's a local-born director, and those were his first two movies. There were some Academy Award nominations for Adaptation that had Nicolas Cage in it. Being John Malkovich, of course, had John Malkovich in it, and he was just a local boy. His name's Spike Jones. Last I heard of him, he was running between L.A. and New York doing some stuff, but those were his first two movies, and like I say, he born and raised in the D.C. area, so we do get them. It's just difficult.
Yeah, wow, I didn't know that. Well, quite a history lesson there.
Yeah, there's some good people come out of our area.
That's right, that's right. So let's go back to 1999. So you were, I believe you told me you were working on a set of The Replacements.
That was my first movie. The company that I was working for was getting ready to shut down and declare bankruptcy. I had some vacation time, so I wanted to go on vacation and get that paycheck and try to get a little bit extra money, and I saw the open call for The Replacements. They were looking for people to sit in the stands and cheer for $100 a day. I thought, okay, I can do that.
And I
went to the open call, and they hired me for 3 weeks, and I stayed 3 months.
Okay. And so now the story goes that while you were on that set, you came up with the idea of, correct me if I'm wrong, creating the idea of making a Yahoo group to trade job leads.
Well, that came a little bit later.
Oh.
What happened was on the replacements, there were a little over 15,000 people that were hired and paid for one or more days' work as extras. So there was a lot of people every day, and a revolving door of new people coming and going. Everybody would tell me, you know, yeah, I shot this TV commercial, and yeah, I'm in this, and yeah, I'm in that. But when you ask them, you know, how did you get that job, nobody would say anything.
Mm.
So I started getting little bits of information, and if you gave me something, I could give you something back from somebody else. From there, when the replacements wrapped, which was the end of October of 99, in January, I called a bunch of people, and I found a restaurant, and we all met, 100 of us from the set, we all met and traded information and shared pictures that we had taken, and stories and everything, and I collected email addresses and did the Yahoo group from there.
Okay.
And the Yahoo groups, I sent the casting notices out for a good number of years until I could get a better way of doing it, which was Dragon Hook Connects.
Okay. Okay. And we'll touch a little bit more on Dragon Hook Connects a little later. But before we get there, now, let's talk about how actors should approach auditions. Do you think they should approach auditions as a make-or-break proposition, or should they just approach it more along the lines of a numbers game?
Well, it is a numbers game. Even the best actors that we've got don't get everything that they audition for. It is normal for a casting director or an agent to audition 10, 15, 20, 100 people for a part, and only one of you is going to get it. So it is a numbers game. And you have to keep that in mind, but you've got to be adept at getting, at winning those auditions and actually getting the job. That has been a major problem of mine. So I just, you know, started bypassing the auditions altogether, and the vast majority of the work that I get is from somebody that I have worked for or has been on a set watching me work before, and I get the parts without having to audition. So I am very much on personal relationships. West Wing, for instance, that's a union show, so I couldn't have a speaking part in it, being a non-union actor. But when I got on the set, I said hello to everybody. Cameramen, electricians, PAs, everybody. All right?
Mm-hmm.
And shook people's hands and was friendly with everybody, and I've gotten work from the guy doing the lights on West Wing was doing the lights on a TV commercial a few weeks later, and he happened to mention, you know, I saw this guy. Why don't you find him?
That's right.
And it led to work. I've gotten work from PAs on West Wing that were doing stuff on something else, and I get the phone call, hey, you know, can you come down and do this? So I am a very, very hard supporter of being personable, of treating everybody better than you get treated yourself, because you never know what job they're going to have next week, and in networking to get work.
Yeah, that's very important. And that kind of segues into something else I want to touch on, is what some ways that actors can cut out the middleman and book their own gigs?
Well, there's a couple of sites, mine being one of them, Women in Film and Video of Maryland, Women in Film and Video of D.C., TIVA, which is Television, Internet, and Video Association of Washington, D.C., and the Actors Center, which is a teaching and networking group for actors in the D.C. area. They all have websites where they put out jobs information. And sometimes it is an agent or a casting director that's hiring. Sometimes it is the filmmaker direct. Sometimes it's a production company or a theater direct. And, you know, you pay attention to the postings, follow the directions that are in the posting. And that's a big thing. That's the biggest complaint that I hear from agents, casting directors, production companies, is that people don't follow directions.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't follow directions, why would they want to hire you and put you on a set where you can cause real damage by not following directions? If they can't get you to submit a file that has your name on it instead of resume, they get 600 resumes with no names on them. They're not going to sit there and go through and open 600 files trying to find you. They just delete them.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to open 600 files marked headshot looking for you, or three-quarter shot, or cop photo. If it doesn't have your name on the file, they delete it.
Right.
Okay? And if you can't follow a simple direction, like put your name on your file before you send it to me, they don't want to hire you.
Mm-hmm.
All right? So that is an extremely important thing, is to follow the directions that they tell you if you want to be hired.
That's right. That's right. So tell me, why should an actor want to become a member of Dragonaut Connects?
Basically, there's a lot of good sites out there, all right? Dragonaut Connects is unique in that there's over 600 employers that post job notices and auditions. Now, they're not all things that everybody's going to want. They are theater jobs in Philadelphia, theater jobs in Pittsburgh, theater jobs in Richmond, Virginia. They are films that are low or no budget, looking for people. There's student films, there's everything, but there are most of the major casting directors post jobs through me. Most of the major agents in the area post jobs through me. Most of they all go to their own files first.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But if they don't find enough of what they're looking for, or if they're trying to find a bunch of people in a hurry, then they shoot it to me and some of the others, like WIF or Actors Center or whatever. So the point is, if you want to work, you go where the jobs are. And
mm-hmm.
I'm still sending out between 125 and 150 jobs each and every week. Now, those are job notices. They're probably looking for somewhere around 2,000 people
mm-hmm.
every week. And anybody should be able to find something that they want every month if they're interested in working off of my site.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's going to be some exceptions. There's some people that are union that want really specialized jobs, union voiceover work or something like that. I don't get as much of as I do other things. So there's some exceptions, but for most of the actors out there that are willing to do union extra work, looking for union public service announcements or TV commercials, non-union public service announcements, commercials, films. You know, I carry more of it than any other site in our area. So that's it. You know, if you want to work, go where they know where the work is.
Right. And how many members do you have now?
It's been holding at slightly over 6,000 for a little while now.
Okay. That's pretty good. That's can't complain about that.
As near as I can figure, there's probably about 22,000 people working Philadelphia, Baltimore, Washington, Richmond. Each of those, it's its own separate market. Most of the people that are working on a regular basis work all four markets, and you know, I've got resources in all of them trying to keep those people in those markets working as best as I can.
Talk a little bit about the market right now in Philly. How's it up there?
Philly's doing fairly well. There's a couple of movies that shot there last year, big productions that were there for a few months at a time. There's a couple of TV shows that come in there and cast. So it's a good market. Pittsburgh did better than Philly the last couple of years. Baltimore, Washington has been down, but Southern Virginia has had a rash of really good long movies shooting down there. So, again, if you're diverse and if you've got resources that get you job notices, you go where the work is.
Right.
Okay. I mean, I've worked in Philadelphia on a movie and then gone to Richmond to work on a movie the following week. And I've worked with some of the same cast and the same crew because everybody works as many of the markets as they can if they want to be a full-time actor in this area.
That's right. That's what it comes down to. So now we've got to wrap up here in a few minutes. Let me throw this question out here. What's some of the things you learned when you were a casting associate?
Well, basically, I learned that they don't know what they want until they see it.
Mm.
Okay. There was a casting call looking for an overweight, older Caucasian male because the star of the commercial was going to be an African-American male who happened to play for the Washington Redskins. There was another person that was a younger person on there, and they wanted the older Caucasian guy. It went to a 30-year-old African-American because he came in for the role of the retired Caucasian football player, and he just did such a good job of bonding with the other people that he got the part. So they really don't know what they want until they see it. That's one of the reasons that they constantly and continually audition as many people as they can for any speaking part at all, day player or above.
That's right. Okay, let's see. So we got about a couple more minutes. So let's, before I let you go, let's talk a little bit about some of your prominent roles. I'll let you talk about a couple of your roles, and then you can just wrap up with anything you want to put out there as far as what's coming next. Quickly talk about in the next 2 minutes or so about how you got West Wing and how you got One-Eyed Horse.
West Wing was cast through Betsy Royal's office. Sariva Racher was working there. Sariva, I met. We were both extras on The Replacements together. And, when she got into Betsy's office and Betsy was looking for extras to work West Wing, she went to a lot of the people that she knew off of The Replacements who showed up on time every day and did their job every day. And I was one of them that she hired. West Wing was fairly unique for me because I got some very, very good camera time, which most extras don't get and most non-union extras don't get. And it was, again, the people on the set that made the decisions that liked me, liked the job that I did, and they put me in areas where I would end up being seen. And I don't know how much time I've got, but I'll tell you a quick thing. There was a girl who, in 2000, played my daughter in a print ad for the Best Westerns in Williamsburg.
Uh-huh.
She since went to college. She went out to L.A., and she got a job as an intern on Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip. She was Tommy Shalami, the director's assistant. And she wrote me and said, you know, have you ever heard of Tommy Shalami? So my reply was simply a picture of me and Tommy and Brad Whitford standing in front of the White House on a West Wing shoot. I just sent her the picture. And even though Tommy hasn't seen me in 5 years and I was an extra on a set that there were always 200 or 300 extras, he remembered me and remembered some of the other shows that I was on and the parts that I played. And he
That's
was the
amazing.
Director of the West Wing. So,
well, Brian, we've got to wrap up.
Okay.
Sorry to cut you off, but, man, I definitely got to have you on again. You're a very great guest, and I'm really glad that you dialed in tonight, man. Just thank you for coming on the show. You've been a real pleasure.
All right, thanks. I'll talk
okay,
to you
Brian.
Later.
Okay, bye-bye. Have a great night. Bye-bye. Okay, so moving on to the next segment. We're going to have Andrea Baker and Joe Higgs, Chief Marketing Officer and founder, respectively, of ProSense Productions, along with Director Felix Pinzarella, DP Abib Awan, and Sound Engineer Jake Weeks. They're going to talk about their upcoming film, The Sick, for which auditions are being held on March 9th and 10th in Columbia, with shoot dates between April and June of 2013. What's it about? Well, it's a throwback to that master of suspense himself, Alfred Hitchcock. So let me patch everybody in here. So let's see, we have Mr. Joe Higgs. Let me bring Joe Higgs in first as I bring in the others. So let's see, Joe.
Hey, how's it going?
Mr. How
Powell,
you doing?
How you doing?
Good, good, fantastic, fantastic.
Cool.
Okay,
good,
so
good.
Let me bring in Andrea. I see Andrea is on the line.
Mhm.
Hey, Andrea, how you doing?
Hi, greetings from Miami.
Fantastic. Oh, you're in Miami. Oh, you're down there where it's warm. Let me bring
slightly
in my
warmer.
Old. My old buddy, Habib. Let me bring him in. Hey, Habib, how you doing? This is William Powell, Inside Acting.
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
Oh, fantastic, fantastic. And let me bring in Felix. Hey, Felix, what's going on?
Hey, Will. How you doing?
All right, fantastic. And so there's one more Nimron here. I guess this is Jake. He's got a last four digits, 1027. I don't know if that sounds familiar to anybody.
That's probably him.
Let's see if that's Jake. Calling Jake. Jake?
Greetings, Mr. Powell.
Hey, how are you, Jake?
Doing just fine.
All right, so we got everybody aboard.
Yes, yes.
Okay,
good
so
good evening, everybody.
Okay. So now, and Andrea, I'm gonna put you on the spot first. Now, tell me, what's your target audience for your movie, The Sick?
Ideally, I think our target audience will be those who are first and foremost fans of the suspense and horror genre, as well as we're looking for. We're looking at definitely the younger audiences, but I think we'll even, you know, we'll cross age genres because we're looking at our lead performers to be in their 30s.
Okay, okay. Okay, so now, Joe, this question is for you. How did you come up with the title?
That was actually kind of it actually evolved through creating the film itself, and there was input from a few others as well. But it has to do with, without giving away much of the storyline, because again, it's kind of a guarded secret as to what the actual plot and the outcome is. But it has a lot to do with the events within the story, and it's actually the title applies to more than just one thing in that story as well. So again, without giving it away, that's about as much as I can give you.
Okay. Okay, Andrea, I'm going to go back to you. Now, I know that you guys have extensive involvement in the Ninjas versus trilogy, basically. So how did you get involved in that?
Well, actually, we came on board in the second one, which was Ninjas versus Vampires. And
okay.
Joe was actually a vampire in the movie, and I was one of the victims. And we absolutely fell in love with the cast and the crew of the production. And when it came time to working on Ninjas versus Monsters, the third in the trilogy, I actually auditioned for one of the witches. Unfortunately, my witch was just not enough to be one of the ones that made it. But I also have such a hand in being behind the camera as a production manager. So I volunteered my efforts as production manager, and then we brought ProSense in to fill in the gaps with production. So that's Joe's department there. So he ended up making that production hum.
Okay. All right, my man Felix, I'm going to put you on the spot here. So now let's talk a little bit about the movie history. Now, in your opinion, what made Hitchcock a great director?
I mean, I think one thing that kind of set him apart was really his mastery of suspense in film. I mean, shooting film and shooting the way that he did, he kind of had to really play things out and not really beat the audience over the head with blood and gore and all that nonsense to kind of try to frighten them and freak them out. It was really, he was able to play up the scenes and kind of let it breathe enough that the audience ended up scaring themselves a little bit more than he got to them. I mean, my favorite quote from him, and I say it all the time, regards a bomb, you know, he says, a bomb under the table that's ticking, then explodes isn't necessarily scary, it's just shocking, but a bomb under the table that doesn't explode and just continues to tick is terrifying. And I think that's really what he mastered in film was you know, making the audience wonder if the bomb was going to explode or not, not necessarily needing to ever show it explode.
Yeah, that psychological terror, I mean, that gets in your head. I mean, not just in movies, but in real life. I mean, you're worried about, what's going to happen tomorrow. We're all worried about what's going to happen tomorrow. Is it going to be an earthquake? Is it going to be a recession? Is it going to be...
And he, as the director, really was able to tap into that fear that we all have in real life.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Hey, Habib, how you doing, man?
Still doing all right, William. How about yourself?
Okay. So now let's talk a little bit about what made you want to be a full-time cinematographer.
I guess it's fair to say that almost everybody likes movies. You know, it'd be pretty hard pressed to meet somebody that says, you know, movies really aren't my thing. You know, it's like air or music even. But I remember the first time I ever actually saw a movie where I enjoyed it, but I thought it was almost on a higher level of appreciation, like approaching near art levels, was when I actually saw the Chinese epic film Hero with Jet Li. I remember I saw that. That's the first time I'd seen a film that used color so vividly, and all the compositions seemed perfect. And I'd never seen that before. It actually made me wonder, you know, who made this, who shot this? I went online, I looked it up, and the main director of photography was Christopher Doyle. And since then, I've been trying to see almost anything he's ever made, just because he's been such a huge inspiration to me.
Okay. All right, so now, Jake, tell me, what does a sound engineer do?
Well, there's a few different facets to that. I'll start by kind of telling you what roles I'm going to be playing in this production, and that's twofold.
Okay.
I'm going to be the location recordist and mixer for the shoot, and basically what I'll be doing is capturing dialogue, Foley sounds and effects like, you know, creepy stuff, creaking floorboards, footsteps, clothes rustling, all the little bits and pieces that need to be, you know, heard to kind of complete the auditory side of the movie. But on top of that, I'm also going to be working in post-production, basically assembling the dialogue mixes and sound design, kind of, you know, tailoring the background ambiences to, you know, to subliminally kind of lead the audience where they need to go. But a sound engineer in general, it's kind of, there's so many different types that it's hard to say without being specific, you know. But that is what I'll be doing on this production.
Uh-huh.
But I also have a pretty heavy background in studio recording and music and live sound reinforcement, you know, concert sound and stuff. So I'm drawing from a fairly large knowledge base, you know, to put what I have to bring on the table for this project.
Hmm. Now I'm going to ask another question.
I was going to ask if I could chime in on that real quick, and this is something that I'd like to hopefully boost Jake's ego just a little bit. Is he's a phenomenal sound engineer and mixer and recordist, and that's actually one of the things I notice in a lot of lower budget films is they don't realize just how important the sound is in a movie. The sound is what makes you feel like you're actually there. You can watch terrible footage, and if the sound is clear, you just see it as, you know, a first person, you know, shot video or found footage or something like that. But if that audio doesn't sound great, you can have the best video quality in the world, and that audio doesn't sound good, you just lose it. You're not in touch with the film at all. So
yeah.
That's one of the things we're really happy about, is to have somebody like Jake on the team.
Huh.
Not only crystal clear, but stylized as well.
Exactly.
The sound, right. The sound plays a greater role in my mind, and after reading this script and doing our first table read as a group, I definitely got really excited because there was tons of opportunity to, you know, more or less play with the audience head a little bit and kind of take them for a ride. I can't really disclose too much detail on what those opportunities are, but needless to say, it's going to be a fun time doing posts on this one.
Hmm. Yeah, so now, Jake, now who was your sound effect hero growing up?
My sound effect hero.
Yeah, your role model. Who did some of the guys that you, or maybe you didn't have any. Maybe you just, what brought you into sound?
I mean, I've been a musician since a very young age, and that was kind of my my segue into audio engineering. I wanted to make myself sound as good as possible. You know, some of I'm a bass player first and foremost, so. Thinking of some of the sounds that inspired me were, you know, people like Jaco Pastorius and great bass players, Weather Report, and, you know, guys like Victor Wooten, of course, you can throw in there. But not to get too far off track, most of my background is in, you know, music and recording. I got into movies about 2 years ago, so... naming someone by name, I probably couldn't do at this point, but two of my biggest inspirations for getting into movies was a movie called Lebanon about a tank crew, and the sound designer for that movie really put a lot of time into the characteristics and the sounds of the tank, and, you know, as the story progresses and the tank crew gets a little more deranged, the sound of the tank also gets a little more deranged in a very subtle ways. So that's kind of a big inspiration that I'm going to be pulling into my work as a sound designer. Another movie that comes to mind with a phenomenal soundscape is Pan's Labyrinth, which is very subtle yet also very blatant at the same time. And I really, really like to use the contrast between a very subtle soundscape that kind of tugs at you almost, you know, subliminally, and something that's really in your face that gets you amped up.
Hmm.
So I like to play with contrast a lot as far as sound goes.
Hmm. So now, Felix, what other films have you directed like this one?
Interesting question, I suppose. This is my first time directing a major feature-length film. I've worked in the past as a cinematographer on a lot of projects with Habib. Right out of college, I started a production company, Burning Glass Media, in D.C. We've been shooting and directing a lot of short music videos, a few short films, some commercial spots, a lot of videography work, some commercial work for things like Taste of DC and some other corporate clients. When I talked to Andrew and Joe, I was originally going to work on this as an assistant director or in a cinematography role with Habib, but then just through talking with them and kind of working on the script and whatnot, I kind of moved into a director role, and I just decided to take it on full-time. And so this is my first big feature, actually my first feature-length, full-budgeted feature.
Okay. All right, Andrea, I think you might be the best qualified to answer this, but anybody else wants to chime in? I guess you could all chime in if you want, whoever feels qualified. But what do you look for when you cast actors?
I think we'll give that one to Felix because he is going to be leading the charge at our casting call, and we're going to all discuss it as a casting panel, but Felix really has an eye of who he's looking for in this casting coming up.
Okay, Felix.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it really is kind of a mix of things. It's no one thing that if they're perfect for the role, you know, I'm going to choose them. I have to say, though, I mean, I think a lot of directors would agree. Obviously, looks and their appearance, not necessarily attractiveness and like how handsome or pretty they are, but really how well they embody the character. Excuse me. Embody the character themselves and like the character that the script kind of is asking for. When I'm working with the writer and I'm working on the script, I'll have a character that kind of develops himself in my mind. And then when I go to the casting call and I look at the actors and I look at the headshots, it's really how close that person, I can see that person being the character. And usually the character that I develop in mind has a lot of latitude in how they can look, but it's really just like age group, you know, obviously gender, stuff like really general things like that, and kind of are the first to kind of start eliminating people, but then it kind of boils down to like, it really just like their expressions and their mannerisms and all that, but it really is the character.
I was going to chime in and say it's going to be whoever's most comfortable and less having to act in order to portray the character that we want on film. They need to be the person, and it needs to be natural. It can't be, you know, somebody pretending to be somebody else. We're looking for, you know, high quality. This person actually could be what, you know, the person we're portraying is. So, you know, it's gonna have to fit very well, basically, is what I'm looking for. Someone that looks the part and is the part.
Huh.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think their ability to act is definitely key. One thing that I usually people who usually ask to do at auditions is act out a scene in a variety of different ways. So they'll play it one way, and then they're asked to read the scene in another way. So like one way you deliver your lines in like in an accusatory sense, so you're like you're mad, and then the next time you have to deliver them in like a defensive sense, so like you're defending yourself, and you have to deliver the lines in a multitude of different ways, and that way the director and then everyone can see how their actual ability to act and not just their ability to read the lines one way. So that, I mean, that's definitely a great asset to have as an actor, you know, because that'll give the director a lot more options when they cast you, as opposed to just being roped into casting one person who can only play one role one way.
Yeah, you know, it's like you don't want to catch them acting, really. I think that's what it comes down to.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly, yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now, Joe, how long did it take you to write the screenplay?
Well, let me put it this way. The initial concept was actually Andrea's. I want to give her credit for that.
Okay.
We as a team kind of developed the whole story throughout quite a while. I mean, we would sit and, you know, over you know, brunches and dinners and stuff over, I don't even know how long. We would just continually sit and develop it, and then in our spare time come up with new ideas and ways to move the story and, you know, come together. So, I mean, it was a long process. I couldn't even say a matter of regular time, at least a year or two, maybe. I don't know, maybe a year or two, somewhere in that range, because it was constantly on and off and developing on it. And then we brought in a screenwriter to help us, you know, build it suitably for the screen, because neither one of us had written anything for the screen specifically before. And then, you know, after that, we've gone through more revisions since then as we brought our team together to work on putting this production together, we all kind of had a hand in kind of, adding little things and taking away and kind of thinking about it, because, as we've been slowly bringing people into it and telling people about, what we can, we are very big on having extra dimensions within the film, extra things that you'll catch your next time watching it, because I know every single one of us in this production is extremely, we love a movie you can watch more than once and catch something new. It makes you think. And,
right.
I love movies, but I can't watch the same movie multiple times without something new hitting me.
Right.
So that's the kind of movie we wanted to produce, was something that you can watch over and over again, and it's hard to get a good suspense that will make you watch it again without, shocking you yet again after that. So that's how we're coming at that.
Yeah, it's good to have a movie that has it holds up on repeat viewing. I mean, when I judge movies, that's some of my favorites. If I go back and look at my favorites, I might have seen it, five or ten times, but there's always just a little detail. That's why that was their motivation for doing that. And it's sort of like you see little caveats, little things here and there that's like different than you noticed before. I mean, it holds up on repeat viewing.
Yep, and you can appreciate it, and it's almost exciting in a way when you catch something new that you didn't see before. It's good to keep that excitement when it's a good movie. So.
Right. So now let's talk about the soundtrack. I see you've got some guys coming on here. My Enemy Complete, Fatally Yours, and some different groups. So talk about how you were able to bring in those groups.
I'll let Andrea take that one.
Okay.
Well, that comes from part of my post-military history. Once I got out of the Army, I decided to follow in my father's footsteps, who used to work in the music business in the 70s through the 90s. I decided that I wanted to do that too. And as I was developing my acting career on the side, I was also developing a music and promotions company. So... So what I did was I started meeting these bands, and I developed these relationships. And so these relationships are over a decade old. And My Enemy Complete is a direct result of one of those. And that relationship has now transpired into these bands appreciating all the work that I've done for them, now coming back and saying, you have a project that we believe in, and we want to contribute to that project by applying sound to that and to make that more compelling. So with that, we've got Fatally Yours. It's another Baltimore band. My Enemy Complete is from the DMV area.
Uh-huh.
And there's also, we just got Accordion Slip, also from Baltimore, and they're going to be on the soundtrack. And we're working on some other bands from Los Angeles and other international artists that we do know. And one of the things that I appreciate about making movies is also a good soundtrack. And
right.
I want to say that this soundtrack is not just going to be the music that you hear in the film, it's also music that's going to be inspired by the film. So each artist is bringing original music to this. And to add to that, we have a score that's going to be added to all the beautiful work that Jake is doing as sound design. We have a score that's being developed by Tim Phillips, and he's actually the keyboardist of My Enemy Complete. So we're very excited that we're able to bring so many talented artists of all types to this film, because I think you're going to be able to see the DMV area represented wholeheartedly, and it's going to be just a complete masterpiece as I see it. If it all comes to fruition as I've envisioned, when it comes to fruition, I believe that this will be a movie that everyone will just want to see and see again, as Joe was saying earlier.
Yeah, and what kind of music is this going to be? Is this going to be rock, pop, rap? I mean, what's the category?
These artists are various. We actually went to a Noise in the Basement show on Monday to record some of the bands in action. And in that respect, they were doing a rock and electronic night. However, my friends that are in these various bands and I would love to, I call them my friends because I treasure our relationship. They can actually do all sorts of musical arrangements. And so we are going to have that rock. We're going to have a little bit of electronic. We're going to have, you know, just simple sound. And these are going to be something that you will want to listen to as well as watch the movie. And we actually are going to have the soundtrack available as a perk in our upcoming Kickstarter campaign.
Oh, is that right? Okay, well, you just keep right on talking about Kickstarter. That was my next question. So you're at liberty to discuss your target goal there for that?
Yes, I'll kick that back over to Joe as the founder and producer, or co-executive producer with me on this project. He can speak to you about the specifics of Kickstarter.
Okay.
All right, yeah. Well, our goal for Kickstarter is actually about $25,000 we're looking for on Kickstarter, which for movies on Kickstarter, that's, I guess on the higher end of some of them, not so bad for others. But for what this movie is going to be, that's just a small, like a tiny percentage of what the actual funds going into the movie are. All of us, you know, our companies that we work for, ProSense, Burning Glass Media, Jake Weeks Audio, like among the various people that are in this, we're all bringing to the table, you know, over $100,000 worth of equipment and locations,
yeah.
And you know, and the talent. I can't even speak for the value of the talent, but so far the pre-production has all been donated. So you know, the money for that is completely not even being spoken about. So the remaining $25,000 is really just enough to kind of kick us into the production, and you know, we'll stretch that as much as we can to do what we need to do. We'll make sure it turns out properly, and you know, if I have to donate more time or more of my own money, then so be it. But you know, I don't think our goal is too unattainable at all. Actually, I think it's pretty easy for us to get. Hopefully.
Okay.
So, yeah, and also one of the things I wanted to kind of make a small note about on the music thing was actually, I believe Tim Phillips has scored for movies before, and then I know that some of the people we have working on the soundtrack for this have done other movie soundtracks, and actually some Hollywood movie soundtracks as well. So the artists, once we release them, all of them, then some of those will be recognizable, so... That's one of the things I want to kind of touch on, but not give away.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So we're going to go back to Habib. And now, Habib, tell me about how many films do you do a year in this area?
In terms of, like, you mean like feature films or just like projects in general?
Projects in general.
Oh, okay. Well, it's been surprisingly a large number of projects, and I obviously didn't even know if there were this many jobs in the area when I started out after I graduated from college. This past year alone, not even a year actually, when me and Felix actually started our Burning Glass Media in, I believe it was May of 2012, I mean, from May 2012 to now, we've worked on almost like 10 projects since then. I mean, we've had work every month. There's never been a month where we haven't had work unless we decided to stop working because we got so caught up with post-production on something because we just thought we were going to go crazy.
Huh.
But it's I'm actually really impressed with this area and that there's a lot of things going on, and I feel like people should stay. There is a reason to stay around here. You know, there's a lot of work, and I think you just need to find it. You need to just go out and seek it out because it is there.
Hmm. Felix, talk about your approach to editing. I know that's a very mysterious thing to me and a lot of my listeners, but what's your whole approach and opinion on the impact of editing on films?
Jeez. I mean, I think it's definitely one of the four major pillars of film. It's definitely one of the smoke and mirror aspects of it, you know, camera work and lighting. It's definitely, that's part of the magic of filmmaking, but then definitely editing is what kind of separates film from other forms of storytelling, you know, like, really everything, what I tell my crew all the time is that we are just storytellers, you know. Like, the only thing that separates us from campfire kids around a campfire is our camera, you know. But in that, it really is editing. It's how you chop up a story and how you retell the story, how you take the scene and you kind of build the suspense in that scene. I'm really technically minded when it comes to editing. Like, I do embrace the technology aspect of it, like working on computers, working with the different editing programs. When I was going to American University, I actually taught how to use editing programs at the library there, so I definitely kind of got very accustomed to using the different technologies, Final Cut 7, Final Cut 10. Now we're very into Premiere. Avid is another big one. And just how to leverage all those things to kind of tell the story that you want to tell. So that's really just a big part of it in general, is how to kind of play with technology to retell that story, you know, and build the suspense and, like, kind of create your own little story arcs within an individual scene, you know. Personally, as a director, I like to work with an editor instead of just take all the editing on myself. I'll work with somebody else, so there's two sets of eyes on it at all times. But, you know, it's really just playing with the scene, you know, and just working it until you kind of have that scene emotionally where you need it to be.
Yeah, you know what? I'm kind of like of the opinion that, and I've talked to other directors, I'm just starting to think that directors are born, not made. I mean, it's like, I think it takes a certain amount of, because a long time ago I did take a videography course, and it,
mm-hmm.
and the teacher had us like splice together footage of the letter A on a chalkboard and the letter B, and it just about drove me crazy. I mean, this was like pre-digital. This was back, I think, when the high 8 camera was like new. That's been a long time ago. Very long time ago. I think it's, I mean, what's your take on that? Is that something that's like, some people have a knack for it and some don't?
Oh, I definitely think so. I mean, I think that kind of permeates all forms of art, though. You know, I was a graphic design minor in college. I loved graphic design. And you see it a lot there, too. You know, it's like there's some people who just kind of have it, whatever it is, to be able to see that thing, whatever that thing is, you know. And I think that a good trait of a good director, though, is to surround yourself with good people, you know, and surround yourself with people who know what that it is as well and are able to see that thing, you know. I think that I make the comparison with the director to a composer in an orchestra. You know, the composer kind of points at the trombone player or the violin player, and they tell them to play the violin at that point, but the composer's not about to go over and try to play the violin for them. You know, just like I would, like when we're on set, you know, I'll tell Habib to do his thing behind the camera, or I'll tell Jake to do his thing behind, you know, the microphone, but I'm not about to go try to hold the camera, and because I know both those guys are fantastic at what they do. You know, they're the best in the area, so I trust them to do a good job for me, you know. So I think a lot of the trait of a good director is just knowing who to surround yourself with and to trust those people.
Yeah, I mean, not try to do everything yourself. It's a very collaborative art form, and it's like if you're not that good at doing a particular job, I mean, it's, you can't be afraid to delegate. I think that's really what it comes down to. I think a lot of projects, when they get in trouble, that's when you know, the person that's, I won't name any names, sometimes you get people that they just have too many hats.
Yeah, you know? No, I mean, that's, like, as the director, you need to be comfortable wearing all the different hats. Like, you need to know, to go back to the other metaphor, like, you need to know what the violin sounds like. You need to know kind of how to play the piano a little bit, but you don't need to be the one trying to do it during the show, you know. So I definitely think, I like to wear all the hats. I like to understand what Habib needs behind the camera, you know. Like, I was a cinematographer, I'm a photographer, like, I like to think from that angle, but I also, like, need to understand what Jake needs with the sound. I need to understand what the actors need, you know. I need to be talking with the actors about their performances in front of the screen and all that, so, you know. And then the location manager, making sure that my people aren't messing up the restaurant too bad or whatever it is, you know. And there's just a lot of things to consider when you're a director, but I think delegation is truly a big part of it. I mean, so that it might be like you said, though, you know, that's not a job for everyone, you know, because a lot of people might want to play the violin, you know, and not necessarily delegate it to other people, you know. So I think there's violinists and there's composers, and maybe that is what it is, born, not made.
Okay, Jake, I just want to see if you're awake back there.
Still with you.
It's getting kind of late. What's your favorite movie soundtrack?
Oh, wow. That's a really tough one because I like soundtracks for different reasons, and as I've evolved as a sound engineer, I'll watch a movie that I haven't watched in a while, and I'll like that soundtrack for new reasons because I've grown, my ear has grown, my understanding of how it's put together has grown. So I'd say I've got to go with Empire Strikes Back. I know it's cliche, and I know it's super nerdy, but watching documentaries of Skywalker sound behind the scenes and the sounds they actually used for the production tracks in the movie was super creative and kind of thinking outside the box. One of the stories that comes to mind is you know, the sound of the blasters, which, you know, was the sound of the sound engineer banging on a metal wire fence with a stick, and then re-recorded and changed completely into the sound of a blaster. It's a lot of the sounds you hear in a movie aren't necessarily what you think they are, and I really enjoy stuff like Empire Strikes Back, like sci-fi stuff, because for the most part, the sounds are, they're not. I don't like synthetic, super synthetic soundtracks.
Really. Uh-huh.
But I do at the same time. But it has to be kind of one or the other. It's very hard to blend an organic sounding soundtrack in with, you know, synthesized sounds and stuff with edges because it just sticks out too much. So it's actually a challenge that I'm definitely looking forward to, and it's kind of got me amped up for the sick because we're going to have some electronica music in there. We're going to have, you know, different styles of music. And for me as a sound designer, having to blend all that together is kind of exciting, especially just to go back a little bit when you guys were talking about editing.
Uh-huh.
You know, I don't see the edit until after picture lock for the most part. I can start doing dialogue edits and preliminary sound design before picture lock, but I really don't start to get to play until I see what kind of fun stuff Felix has in store for me. You know, where the beats of the edit hit, you know, kind of determine, you know, where I'm gonna, you know, place my crescendos and stabs and swells and all the little things that are gonna tug on the audience emotionally. But you know, some of my what makes a soundtrack good to me isn't necessarily the it's hard to really define it, but
uh-huh.
if it pulls on my heartstrings, I can't deny it. I can't deny the power of that soundtrack, and that's really what I'm going for. Anything from The Empire Strikes Back to let's say a goofy movie like Super Troopers. You know, you wouldn't necessarily, think, oh, that's got a phenomenal soundtrack. And, you know, in a lot of ways, it's not. But it gets the point across. And it gets the point across, pretty bluntly. You know, as opposed to something like Pan's Labyrinth, which is much more surgical in its delivery, where it's not so in your face. It's not so loud. It kind of sneaks in and gets you by surprise. So I don't know. I'm not sure if that really answered your question very well, but Pan's Labyrinth is definitely in the top five for me.
Yeah. Okay, so all right, folks, so we're getting ready to wrap up here. So what I want to do, I want to touch on the actual audition. So, Andrea, you're really going to be on the spot here. Talk about these auditions you have coming up for your movie on March 9th and 10th. I know they're in Columbia, Maryland. And so you're on. Tell us what's going on with that.
Okay, well, first and foremost, anybody who's looking to audition still can submit their resume and headshots, and they can find the information to do that at prosenseproductions.com. And then we'll take that and we'll give you a time slot. So anybody who submits early, they can get a certified time slot, and I think we actually have gotten such a good turnout so far that Saturday's time slots are all been booked, and they will be getting their times next week if you've already submitted. Mm. And as an added bonus, for anybody who submits early, we're going to give them the sides early, so they'll have a little bit of time to work with the material we're giving them. So it's March 9th and 10th, which is not this weekend, it's next weekend, and it's in Columbia, Maryland at the Faith Place. Now, it's a spa, but we've actually reserved some of the rooms aside from the spa around the back. And so we have this excellent space to work with, and we're going to have everyone that was on the phone tonight actually be there in person, so we'll be able to see all the talent come through the door. We still have open casting available on Sunday, so feel free to come out. And we're looking forward to having the people come. Again, prosenseproductions.com is where you can find all the information about casting and the sides of, and the characters that we're looking for. So it's not just the two leads. We're looking for a variety of other types of people to play some of the other minor roles that are in the film. And so I say minor only because they have less lines, but every person that we cast has a vital role to the script. And I know we haven't said much about that script, but it's important to know that's there for a reason. We all are on this project because we believe in it, and we believe that we've got an excellent product here.
Yeah, and you're really building the suspense. I mean, yeah, this is going to be really good because, I mean, I even read that in your literature you were talking about those who come aboard or who are cast, they've got to sign a non-disclosure agreement, too. So you're that really serious.
That is correct. In fact, only the lead actors will know the final scene. And we are keeping that, besides the crew. The crew does need to know it. but only the lead actors will be privy to that information because it is the lead actors that have to carry it out from the very beginning to the very end. So the non-disclosure agreement is very, very vital to our project because we definitely want to build that suspense. So anyone who's a part of it can feel the energy on set, but when it comes to theaters, we want everyone to be shocked.
Wow. I mean, on that note, I think we'll wrap up. Andrea, Joe, Felix, Habib, Jake, I mean, I just can't thank you enough for coming on the show. I'm really excited about this project you've told me about. I'm so glad that you guys all tuned into the show, and I'm really excited about it.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for having us on.
We appreciate. We appreciate being on the show.
Yeah, and the very good answers. It's the kind of interview I like. I ask a question, and my guests come up with these brilliant, thought-provoking answers that really, really entertain not just me but my audience. So I just thank you again for coming on.
You should see the movie.
Like I said, yeah, we have the best people on every task in this. So yes, you will get good answers.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no doubt. And I definitely want to have you guys on again. I think probably a good time is, well, you tell me. I mean, we'll talk. We can maybe even talk offline, but I'm thinking that this is something that I want to really keep up with. You know, maybe have you guys back on maybe after you've selected your cast or maybe after you finish filming or whenever you want to come on.
Yeah, for sure.
I think after casting, we can probably do something like that. Yeah. Yeah, we'll talk some more offline, but yeah, I think we can do that.
Fantastic. Okay, well, like I say, thanks again for coming on, and wish you a good night.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, all right.
All right, have a night.
Good night. All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, dear listeners, I have a nice little quote for you here tonight. And I don't know who originally wrote it, but I'm going to read it. Can't take credit for it, but to admit that you were wrong is to declare that you are wiser now than you were before. Good night.
Type guy always takes